Take the shot.
Yeah.
So, Mike, did you intentionally dress up like Everlast tonight?
Where's your nose ring?
On this episode of the MacGuffin Guild, there comes a time when you've got to take a stand. And that time is now, in Judgment Night. This 1993 action crime thriller stars Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Dennis Leary, Stephen Dorff, Jeremy Piven, Peter Green, and Everlast. Directed by Stephen Hopkins. We're going to talk about the works of Dennis Leary, the tagline Justin doesn't like, who Stephen Hopkins wanted for the cast, the legendary rap rock soundtrack, and what caused this film to flop. We'll dig into the details of Alan Silvestri's original score, why you shouldn't travel with Jeremy Piven, the split diopter lens, what's under Michael DiLorenzo's hat, and how Adam Carolla is involved in all of this. We'll also get into the works and plight of Kevin Jarre, the time Pat got chased by suspected murderers, Batman themes, the Fraggleverse, and Stephen Hopkins' loves. I'm Pat Doherty, and as always, I'll be joined by my fellow MacGuffins, Justin Jones and Mike Antonio. Our theme song was written and performed by Jordan Vincent. Don't move. Don't whisper. Don't even breathe. It's Judgment Night.
I raised you better than this.
And welcome to another episode of the MacGuffin Guild. I am Pat Doherty. And as you know, a MacGuffin is a plot device used to drive along a story. And we here on the Guild like to use the film as a MacGuffin to drive along our conversation. So before we get going, I just want to give a quick heads up that the audio may sound a little different on this episode than what you're used to. Our very own Mike actually traveled this week to visit his hometown where he came from. And apparently the signal, he's calling in, apparently the signal from Tatooine in a moving sandcrawler is not nearly as stable as you would hope in 2021. So with that said, just please forgive us. We promise to get back on our game for episode 31. So anyway, now to introduce the fellas. First, Justin Jones. Justin, how's it going?
I'm magnificent.
Good.
I'm pretty good. Glad. I was telling you earlier, I'm on. I've been on vacation all week because I took a page out of Mike's book. It was my birthday, so I took off.
That's awesome.
Took off for the week.
That's great.
Also, a little disappointing though because birthday came and went, and I did not receive my copies of Kill or Be Killed or Kill and Kill Again
on
Blu-ray.
So
they're probably lost in the mail or something. I'm sure I'll get
them.
Yeah,
I'm sure. It's been going slow these days.
What was the one word you used for Justin the one time?
God, I don't know.
The
fabulous.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
I think that was it. Yeah. Fabulous Justin Jones.
I've since then ascended to magnificent.
I do like when you use like very large, majestic words like that. I think that's great.
I like doing it just because I screw up everyday ordinary words on a regular basis on here.
Like being as this is like an audio medium, I think it's great like that you use big words because like for me when I listen back and you use a big word like that, I like envision you like entering the room like a magician in like a cloud of smoke. It's just fun.
Well, I don't have to envision that. That is how he enters rooms.
Yeah. Well, speaking of envisioning, we have a visual on Mike Antonio this week now that he has a camera up and running, so we get to see his mug.
Yeah, we got visual, but he sounds like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can finally see him again, which, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, really.
Yeah. Double-edged sword.
I mean, like I said earlier, now you guys have to see my horrid face. So
your hard face?
Horrid. H-O-R-R-I-D.
I thought you said your hard.
My rugged, manly like, face.
What a weird way to describe your face. Maybe you should get some lotion.
They say hard. People have a hard drug face.
Yeah. That's you.
Which
oh my
I
God.
Don't.
Anyway, the man with the hard face, Mike Antonio, how's it going?
I don't know. I need my fix.
Oh, shit. I need my Blu-ray fix.
Yeah. Well, I got my Blu-ray fix. I got two movies in the mail today.
What'd you get?
Judgment Night.
Do you plan on watching them? Is my follow-up question.
Well, one's a movie I've seen a million times, but it.
Wait, I want to guess. Give me like a hint.
Jesus.
A hint. Anything.
Passion of the Christ.
It's a space movie. It's a space movie.
a space movie.
Horror movie.
Jason X.
No, a space horror movie.
Leprechaun. Leprechaun.
No.
Planet.
It's
Terror.
It's not a. It's not a movie that has sequels. It's a standalone film.
Standalone film.
Event Horizon.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Justin, nice job.
I cleared my mind and it came to me.
And then the other one I got is the new, what's it called? Greenland or whatever. The disaster movie with, what the hell is his name?
Captain Planet.
Yeah, I think it's Gerard Butler. Yes.
Okay. Hmm.
Which everybody says is actually pretty good. Like, it's kind of like a. It's not a like a super far fetched like 2012 type. It's a little more grounded type of disaster movies.
When you're watching it 8 years, you'll have to tell us about it.
Yeah, that, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm looking. I'll probably watch that tomorrow. I won't have time tonight. But yeah. So I it's a blind buy, but I heard good things. So I was like, cool.
Nice. I'm looking at it now. Scott Glenn's in it.
Oh yeah, yeah, he is.
All right. Well, so Mike, you're good. I don't remember if you said that.
Nah, I'm terrible.
Okay. Looking
and sounding.
Yeah, my hard face.
Your hard.
Oh, God.
Also, right, on the visual front, I was just going to say we all dressed appropriately for this for the listeners.
Well, you guys did. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't get the memo on that. I'm just wearing a Star Wars shirt.
Yeah,
which doesn't really tie into anything with this film. So, Judgment Night is the film that we did. 1993, 1 hour and 50 minutes long, which is weird because I don't remember it being quite that long. I thought it was like an hour 30.
Yeah, it's actually a longer film than, like, I don't know, it moves briskly.
It doesn't feel like almost 2 hours.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a good point. I agree. Which is, this is very contrast to the one we did last week, which was shorter and felt longer. This one's longer and feels shorter. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's very true.
And this is directed by Stephen Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen Hopkins, which I'll get into his movies here in a second, but interesting to know he dated Heather Graham, Mia Kirshner, and Naomi Watts.
So Jesus Christ!
Wow.
Can I steal his identity, maybe?
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was noteworthy, but
that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Some of his big films. This one, obviously, Predator 2,
mm-hmm.
Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, Lost in Space, the 98 version.
Oh, that one I didn't know. Okay.
I just saw that myself. Yeah, I didn't know that.
And what else? I feel like there was another one. He did a bunch of TV stuff, House of Lies, I guess 24, that 24 stuff with, what's his name, Kiefer Sutherland.
Mm-hmm. He did the movie Blown Away.
Oh yeah, the one that's the one with
Jeff Bridges, Tommy Lee Jones, Forrest Whitaker.
Yes.
Lloyd Bridges.
Not the one with the other Corey where it's like they're just making love the whole
time.
No,
where that was like a softcore like Cinemax type of movie. No, not that one. Which I don't think I've ever seen this movie Blown Away, but I've heard of it. Have you guys seen that one?
I haven't seen it.
Huh, interesting. Maybe we should do that one time.
Yeah, it was a year after this one. You want to do it tonight? Yeah, fuck it. Cue it up.
Yeah,
do that
it.
One instead.
So tonight's movie is Blown Away, 1994, exactly. Directed by Stephen Hopkins.
We're just going to talk about the trailer because that's all we have time to watch.
Yeah.
We're going to do an hour and 45 minute breakdown of the trailer. So Stephen Hopkins directed. Before we begin, a spoiler-ravaged synopsis. New father Frank, played by Emilio Estevez, departs for a night out, joining friends Mike, played by Cuba Gooding Jr., and Ray, played by Jeremy Piven, as they head to a boxing match. At the last minute, they are joined by John, played by Stephen Dorff, who's Frank's brother. Stuck in gridlock traffic, the guys take a shortcut that gets them lost. In a very dangerous neighborhood, they witness a murder by a gang leader called Fallon, played by Dennis Leary. They flee. But Fallon now wants them hunted down and eliminated. Judgment Night. I'm going to go over Rotten Tomatoes here in a minute, but first I wanted to start with some taglines for this film. How do you guys feel about that?
I like it.
Sure.
I'm for it.
Let's do it up.
Oh, well, you know, actually, real quick, before I do the taglines, we have to mention the cast again, just before I dig in. I feel like we're jumping the gun here.
Yeah, that is a big, important part of this, yeah.
All right, so the cast on this film, Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., Dennis Leary, Stephen Dorff, Jeremy Piven, Peter Green, Michael DiLorenzo, with a small part.
Mm-hmm.
You skipped over Everlast.
You'll remember him. Actually, I didn't get the Everlast yet.
Eric Schrody.
Okay. I thought they would have the Everlast in there. Yeah, yeah. Everlast.
All you have to do is look at me, and you'll be reminded.
Yeah, Mike looks like Everlast today. You should be Everlast for Halloween.
Then you might know what it's like. God damn, these are bad. We gotta step up our joke game. Jesus.
What do you mean that's funny?
Oh God. All right, so anyway,
I'm still laughing.
All right, so taglines for this film. So this first one I thought was really interesting, especially if you look at our recent films that we've done on the podcast. So this first tagline, it says, "They had a choice, kill or be killed."
Oh,
I like how we could tie that in. Yeah, that's pretty good.
All right, so here's another one. "An evening on the town, a heavy gridlock, one very wrong turn."
It works.
All right, here we go. "The longest distance between two points is a shortcut through hell."
Ooh. I like that one, actually.
that one's brutal.
Yeah, it's got a certain amount of cheese, and it's a little, like, it kind of, you know, sticks with you. It's
I mean, let's be honest, though, and there's a few more I want to get to here in a second, but a shortcut through hell, I mean, anyone who's ever been even close to a city, I mean, that was a pretty standard city. Like,
I think the hell part comes from having their ride lit on fire and then having dudes chase him with guns and having watching one of, spoiler, see one of their friends thrown off a building. That part was probably the hell part. So,
oh, okay.
And so witnessing
not
an
the inner city roads. Okay, I got
it. Yeah,
you.
It's more the events that turn it into hell, not the actual place.
Okay, we'll get into that. So here we go. "Don't move, don't whisper, don't even breathe." I like that one. That's the one I think of
that's
when
the,
I...
Yes, that's the one I'm most familiar with that I see all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why I don't like that one later.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, what's that? Read it off to me again real quick so I can write
don't
it down.
"Don't move."
Okay.
"Don't whisper."
Uh-huh.
"Don't even breathe." Got it.
Okay, yeah, that was the one I don't like.
All right, here's two more. "There comes a time when you've got to take a stand." That one's motivational, but doesn't really fit. It doesn't fit with this.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That sounds and like it should be for the movie The Stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last one, "In a deadly game of cat and mouse, they must fight to survive."
I've heard that one before, too. Mm-hmm. That's probably the second most that I've heard. But the don't, what is it? "Don't breathe, don't move, don't breathe."
Justin,
don't
you
whisper.
Wrote it down. What is it?
"Don't move, don't whisper, don't even breathe." And
that's
I almost
it, yeah.
Couldn't read my own handwriting.
All right, so let's hop over to Rotten Tomatoes. You fellas want to guess what this film got on the tomato meter? Oh, and I don't think I mentioned, real quick, before we, while you guys are thinking, this film came out in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that part?
No,
and
he's
rated R.
Yeah, you didn't say that.
That kind of goes without saying, but figured I'd throw that out there. So anyway, Mike, this was your selection. I'll have you guess first. Tomato meter. What do you
okay.
think?
Well, I know this movie was a flop theatrically, like big time. So I'm going to guess both the critic and audience scores are going to be fairly low. But not super low. Let's say critic 48.
Okay. Justin?
I'm going to say 38.
Justin's really close. 35.
God.
I want to talk about something. We're going to do the audience score here in a second, but you say that this film was pretty much a bomb in the box office.
Yeah.
There is potentially a reason for that, which I didn't know about until just recently.
Spill it.
Which, well, we'll get to it. So
I thought you were going to talk about it now.
I mean, do you want me to?
Please do.
I mean, we may forget about it later.
Yeah,
so.
I don't want to write it down either.
No, it's on. I got it on my notes.
Okay.
We won't forget.
Okay.
Okay. So that's what we call a teaser.
Yeah. Oh, is this going to be another one where we drop teasers the whole time? Those are fun. I think we did one other one.
Sure. Yeah.
And only tied up about 30% of our teasers, I think. This will be a chance for redemption.
Yep. Yeah, maybe. Audience score. Who wants to guess? Mike?
Well, right, I'll go first, I guess. Audience and listening, it's a little higher, but again, still not very high.
Mm-hmm.
52.
Mm. Justin?
42.
Now, Mike almost got this one by 2 points, 54.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. So. Yeah, I knew that like this movie's not super well liked, which is a shame, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So let's give a range here. We'll start with, let me do some positives first. This is Janet Maslin from New York Times. A tight, energetic sleeper in the action-adventure genre manages to pack a few anti-machismo sentiments into an otherwise brawny tale.
Mm.
Chase Whale from ChaseWhale.com. The film was directed by Stephen Hopkins, who directed Predator 2 and Blown Away. So this film has, quote, irresistible 90s movie written all over it.
It is a 90s movie. It definitely feels like a 90s movie too. Like, it has like one thing I did like about it. I like the gritty kind of dark atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's this movie is 1993 when you watch it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, but it is a really well done film. Like, it feels well produced. It's not like it doesn't feel choppy to me. It doesn't feel amateur.
There's some really, really good camera work and like crane work, yeah. and mm-hmm. it looks like some Steadicam in there too,
mm-hmm.
here and there. But yeah. Definitely the crane work is really good in this.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm Johnson from Hartford Courant says, Hopkins displays a certain artistry, even in a film with little to say about anything other than warning against unfamiliar detours.
It looks like he's looking for a cautionary tale, and it wasn't I don't think it was a caution. I think it was just like, hey, what would happen if A happened, and then you get B result. I think it was just...
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for, to swing it back to Don't Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Your Juice in the Hood, that Justin and I were talking about before mm-hmm. the show, and then Pat brought up also later before the show. He's looking for the
he has such a roundabout way of laying a scene, doesn't he?
His build-ups to his statements are getting longer and more intricate.
It's gonna be I'm gonna make it so elaborate it's gonna take the entire episode to get to one of my points.
The point.
Where I was talking to Justin about the Keenan Ivory Wayans character pops up every once in a while in that movie where. Anytime a character kind of goes on a monologue teaching a lesson or something, he pops up and he's just like, message! So I think that's what this guy's looking for in this movie.
Oh, yeah,
he's looking for the message!
Yeah. All right, Felix Vasquez Jr. from Cinema Crazed says, works as an absurd but entertaining action thriller.
Absurd? I don't find this movie absurd.
Mm. I do.
I don't.
But I think it's everything else is right, too. Read it back. What'd he say?
Oh, God, which one?
absurd
but entertaining action thriller?
Yeah, it was absurd, but entertaining, and an action thriller. I agree with all those points. And maybe the absurd's a little harsh.
And it was also an.
An, yeah.
My fucking God. Did we just
you used
start
every
over?
Other word in the sentence.
That's true. Well, I didn't want to rip him off. I didn't want to have to end up paying him royalties, so I kind of changed it a little bit.
I don't find this movie absurd.
I don't know. I think, Justin, maybe you can, what's the word you always used, Mike, expound upon that?
Or extrapolate.
Extrapolate. Yeah. Maybe you could extrapolate.
The next hour and a half is going to be me extrapolating what I just said.
All right. Very good. I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay.
All right. Let's do some negatives. Variety staff from Variety says, this is an exceedingly well-directed, cleverly filmed and edited, tension-filled affair. It is also a wholly preposterous, muddled, paranoid view of the inner-city nightmare where the slightest misstep is sure to have a fateful result.
That sounds more like a neutral review. They give you a little positive. They give you a little personal perspective.
My thing is, it's not really... Yeah, in some ways, it does portray that part of the city as bad, but...
they're talking about a bad part of the city. It's not like saying the whole city's bad or that whole entire area of the city. It's a location in a story where they want everybody like handing out flowers and kissing each other. Like,
There are places like that.
Yeah, there's dangerous places you probably don't want to be.
They exist.
Okay, well, I want to say something which I thought was really interesting. I guess some people, and I might be jumping the gun a little bit, but F it. Let's just do it. Some people equate this to being kind of a very subtle remake of Deliverance,
but
reversed.
Okay.
So whereas Deliverance is you got a bunch of city guys that go into the country, the backwoods of Virginia, and they encounter some pesky characters back there doing bad things.
Yeah,
and,
doing bad
four,
things
it's
back
four,
there.
Four friends, just like this, and the fates of some of the friends are somewhat similar.
Yeah, because that would be like saying that the whole countryside is like that. Like,
well, exactly. That yeah. I'm kind of like extrapolating your point, saying I mean, just because this bad thing happened in a city doesn't mean that all cities are bad. Just like Deliverance doesn't mean all country folk are bad.
If,
like, it's ridiculous.
If they drove through that part of the city 5 minutes sooner or 5 minutes earlier, they wouldn't have ran into the problem they ran into. They just would have drove through and got back on the expressway, and that would have been the end.
And maybe got there in time for the fight.
Right. It's because they saw this particular event at this spot that everything happened. It's not. It's not saying that that place is just teeming with, you know, no matter what they did, they were going to run into horrible trouble there.
Yeah, that's true, because also the first people they meet, they're just guys hanging out, like drinking or something. I don't know if they were homeless or just kind of whatever. And they kind of like, they're razzing them, those guys a little bit. Those guys have a little fun with them, like they're going to pull a gun out. He just pulls a 40 out. And like, and then they're like, you know, giving them hell. But it was like they kind of brought that on, but it's not like they were chasing after them with like knives and stuff. It's just they got involved with dangerous people in this area, which there's dangerous people in certain areas, you know.
Yeah, it could have happened in a suburban neighborhood.
Yeah, that's true.
It very, very easily could have happened in a suburb. Like, that's my point, is like, it doesn't matter where it happened. It's not portraying the whole place in a bad light. Now, you see that the people are kind of afraid and stuff, like at the apartment building and stuff.
Yeah, that didn't seem like a very chill place to live.
Well, no, not at all.
If you look at it from the clues, when they first walk up to that building, there's the kid outside, like a lookout. Mm-hmm. So it's like a gang. It's a gang. There's a gang there, so the people that live there are cautious because of that. They don't want to get involved in any of that. And that is also something that happens.
Let's see here. James Berardinelli from Real Views says, it's refreshing to know that it's not just characters in horror films who are irredeemably dumb.
What?
I got to be honest, though. I think even with this film, I thought they walked a fine line with... And again, this is something we could touch on. We've already touched on it in past episodes with When a Stranger Calls, how something as simple as having a cell phone could have changed everything.
Yeah.
This film obviously was, it came out before the cell phone craze where everyone has a 4K cell phone with great service in their pocket. That could have changed everything. But with the circumstances of the time, if you're looking at the film through the lens of the time that it came out, I think they walked that line pretty well by keeping these guys in precarious situations, keeping it entertaining, but keeping it borderline believable. Like, they weren't making any completely absurd decisions. Like, why the fuck would you do that?
I disagree.
Well, no, I think they balanced it kind of well.
There was a pretty good balance there, yeah.
Jeremy Piven's character uses the cell phone. It's actually working, but he tells them it's not working. Because they got all the booze and stuff, he doesn't want to admit that they hit somebody while they were drunk.
Yep.
So that's why he doesn't use the cell phone.
I get it. I mean, you don't have to convince me.
I'm not saying it to you. I'm saying it to general.
I think when you...
Yeah, that was a clever part. No, I think that was clever the way they set that up, that they had the means, and then why he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. No, I like that, because his character definitely had that... he was definitely
He thinks he can like talk his way out of everything, and
it was par for the course for his character to pull something like that.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't need the police. I'm not gonna get myself hung out to dry for this bullshit. I've already hit something. I'm going to buy this busted ass TV and this RV, and I think he just wanted to keep the authorities out of it, and it came back to bite him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But Justin, I want to dig into later your thoughts on that, because clearly
I'm going to pepper them in as they come up.
Okay, cool.
Because not only that, the dumb thing they did after that, in my opinion, is they see the cops and then they're like, oh, let's go find the cops. So then they're yelling over their speaker, like coming out of the RV. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, come back. We got somebody that was shot here, announcing to the entire neighborhood that they have the guy that this gang. I mean, they don't know. But at the same time, it's like, hey, come back. We have someone who's shot. And then anyone who's like an earshot's like, oh, there's the guy we're looking for in a giant silver SUV.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but again, they were in over their heads. They were out of their element. You know,
and they didn't know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They didn't know.
It didn't help their situation. Right. That's why I'm giving that one a pass.
So Matt Brunson, I think, kind of agrees with you from Film Frenzy. He says, short on both logic and suspense.
Oh, I don't agree with the suspense.
Yeah, I think there was suspense. I think there was some... Yeah, at first I felt like it was kind of more logical, and then I felt like by the end of the movie, which we'll get to, the logic I thought was completely almost thrown out the window in their decision-making. Or, I don't know, this is why I'm excited to talk about it, because I feel like Mike's going to be like, this is why you're wrong. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting perspective I didn't think of.
Maybe. Maybe not. Yep. Maybe you'll teach me how dumb this movie is, and I'll end up hating it.
Yep.
Well, let's hope so. We're all about downs, not ups. No, I'm just...
Let tonight be the judgment night.
Oh.
Okay, so Richard Harrington from the Washington Post says the filmmakers have made a big deal out of a soundtrack that features 10 collaborations between rappers and rockers. The theme is performed by De La Soul and Teenage Fan Club, but their casting consciousness is less adventurous.
What? Their casting consciousness?
So are they saying they should have cast rappers in the roles? I'm not understanding.
I think maybe they did.
Everlast.
The only thing I can think is maybe they're honing in on Emilio, which there's a backstory to him getting cast as well.
Is there? Okay, which is interesting. I don't know that. Yeah.
What's it, what is it? I'm curious now. What?
I will tell you.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm not sure exactly what he meant. Did he not like the cast? Because I thought the cast was okay. But also, one thing I did like about this movie, which is going to definitely color my opinion, there's definitely a nostalgia factor here. That like the entire cast, I like, you know, watching them in the 90s growing up, obviously the soundtrack. There's so much nostalgia here that was like fun to watch for me. Nostalgia alone was cool. You know?
This is according to Variety via IMDb. Emilio Estevez was far down the list of actors in consideration for the role of Frank Wyatt. The trade paper story explained that the studio's desperation to quickly cast the lead role also led to Estevez taking a much higher than expected payday. Actors who passed included Tom Cruise and Christian Slater. Estevez asked for and received $4 million to star in the film. He was able to get a much larger payday than anyone expected because he was available at a point where the film needed to either go into production or have the plug pulled. And they had spent more than twice that $4 million figure on pre-production, which would have been lost if he hadn't taken the lead role. So he was not their top choice, nor... It seems, I don't even think he was close to the top of their list, but it was a desperation move, so they didn't lose even more.
He had them by the balls.
Who was the second, you said Tom Cruise, and who was this, the one after that?
Christian Slater.
I think I could see Christian Slater playing this part. I don't know about Tom Cruise.
I don't see Tom Cruise and Jeremy Piven working well together. I feel like there'd be a lot of similarities in like their presentation.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I see Tom Cruise as like, he's an action guy, obviously, but he can also have that. I mean, what's the one movie he did where the Show Me the Money movie? He's a wheeler and a dealer. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like that. That's I could see him and Piven kind of trying to rest in the same space. Whereas I don't feel that even remotely with Estevez, and I think Christian Slater would fit more that Estevez role.
Speaking of space.
That's where you are right now?
Stephen Hopkins wanted Kevin Spacey as the villain.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and he wanted Travolta, I guess, to play the...
What does that have to do with space? I'm trying to understand
Spacey.
Your...
Spacey.
Spacey.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Jesus.
Keep up, Pat. My razor sharp wit.
I don't
you gotta stay on your feet around here. You gotta stay on your toes around here.
All right. So, Kevin Spacey was going to play the Dennis Leary part. Is that what you're saying?
Stephen Hopkins wanted Kevin Spacey for that role, and he wanted John Travolta, I guess, for the Emilio Estevez role. Hmm. That's what the director wanted, but that obviously didn't happen.
No. That's interesting.
Yeah.
The creep factor he had in Seven was enough for me.
Yeah.
I wish he didn't go off the fucking rails. But anyway, did it to himself. But the scene you were just referencing, Justin, where the RV is driving through the town, chasing after the police car, the RV passes Patty's Pub from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia in that scene.
Oh, no shit.
It's not located in Chicago or Philadelphia, but in Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
So I might as well just touch on a couple of things here. Adam Carolla got his first job working as a stand-in in this film. Though he is 4 inches taller, Carolla was a stand-in for Michael DiLorenzo, who played the kid, according to Carolla on his March 30th, 2016 podcast.
Interesting.
Adam Carolla is the guy from The Man Show, right?
Yeah.
He looks nothing like Michael DiLorenzo. I guess they both have dark, curly hair, so I guess if you're in the distance, I guess.
Yeah, but he's like 4 inches taller, which is weird. Like,
I don't get...
Then again, maybe it was just like... somebody doing him a favor. I don't know.
Or maybe it's just like a chest high shot or something, you know, where you wouldn't even notice.
Oh, okay. Let's just stink.
Stink.
I'm on doing it. Plenty of that. Let's just stick with some of these interesting trivia bits here.
Okay.
During the filming of the rooftop confrontation between Fallon and Ray, which is Jeremy Piven and Dennis Leary, the cast and crew were stunned by the sound of a random, unexpected gunshot. The crew ran downstairs to find a 16-year-old kid who had been shot by another youth of the same age as part of a gang initiation by murder. The army was brought in to secure the area the next day, and production was moved elsewhere.
Can we go back to that person's review about how it's a bad this movie's a bad representation of this area?
It clearly was a bad area.
Nowhere in this movie did we see a 16-year-old kid get executed.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Which, by the way, rest in peace, that kid. That sucks,
man.
Yeah. I thought this was really interesting. I didn't know this. We're getting right to some interesting tidbits.
Okay.
Progressive metal band Tool and rock rap group Rage Against the Machine recorded a song for the movie soundtrack, which they were not pleased with. They ended up scrapping the track, which hasn't been given an official title, but it is usually referred to as Revolution or You Can't Kill the Revolution. The song was leaked on the internet and can be found on SoundCloud, and the song lasts nearly 8 minutes.
What the fuck?
The song is very slow, and the vocal duties alternate between Maynard James Keenan and Zach De La Rocha.
I have never heard that fact, and me being a huge Rage Against the Machine fan, I would like to hear that song, so I'm going to have to search that out.
Well, I'm going to plug it in right here.
You both like Tool, right?
Yeah,
I like Tool.
I mean, I don't love. I probably like both those bands. Well, no, I think I like Rage a little more. But Tool, I like Tool. I mean, I don't dislike either one of them.
I'm definitely more of a Tool fan than a Rage Against the Machine fan.
Wow. Are you?
Yeah.
I've never been able to get into Tool. I've tried a billion times to listen to them, and they do nothing for me.
I mean, not to sound like, you know, everybody else, but I definitely appreciate the older Tool stuff more than the newer stuff. Mm. I just can't do the 17-minute songs. Like, just give me the rockin' 4-minute tunes, and let's get to this thing. But I think maybe that's why I appreciate Rage a little more. It's just more kind of like raw rock music. Like,
well, you know. I've always been a huge Rage Against the Machine fan. You probably know that, Pat. I mean, in the early days, I was always listening to them.
Yeah, I think you're the one that introduced me to them.
I don't feel like their combo of those bands really fits the same.
You're right.
Meshing as the other bands because they're both basically rock bands.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Maybe that's why it didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't work, but I still want to hear the song.
Yeah, me too.
So, Mike, this was your selection.
See.
And I would love to know how it ended up here on the MacGuffin Guild.
Well, my history with this movie is not amazingly intricate. It's one of those movies that I just, like, rented, you know, because it came out in 93, so I was probably 14 or 15 or so when I saw it. Mm-hmm. Just one of those blind rentals. Like, I had heard of the movie, and I knew all the actors in it. You know, I was already familiar with most of them. So I was like, oh, this might be pretty cool. And I rented it, and I loved it. And I'm pretty sure I introduced you to it.
Yeah, me, yes.
Yeah, Pat. Little tidbit, I do remember also one year, I think it was for my birthday, and you were at my house, and my mom got me a couple movies for my birthday, this being one, and the others being Terminator 1 and 2, all on VHS. And I remember the Terminator one was weird because it was like that. It was like a double wide.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yep.
VHS cardboard case.
Old school box set.
Yeah, it had both movies in one.
Yeah.
Double wide case.
Yeah.
Sleeve.
Yeah, like dual sleeves.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember that specifically. I got those movies and Judgment Night at the same time, and that's probably when I watched it with you, maybe. Unless I had already seen it with you, I'm not sure. But anyway, yeah, I love this movie, and obviously, and I've heard that this is pretty actually common. People love the soundtrack, which I do. The soundtrack to this is extremely influential for me.
It slaps. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it still slaps.
There we go, Justin.
You worked that in perfectly.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's like the soundtrack is, you guys know, like my first love was always rap. I didn't get into rock till a little later. So this was like a perfect little bridge for me.
For his little car.
At the right time. And it introduced me to some rock and rap groups.
Yeah.
So, I could go on and on about what this soundtrack introduced me to, but holy shit, dude. Yeah.
I think it was for a lot of people. I think it really, because it was, they put together good songs because I think rap rock is one of my least favorite genres of all time. And I understand, like, I never liked any of it except for this soundtrack, which I feel like was kind of like the genesis of that whole
thing. I think a lot of groups that became like the rap rock groups were influenced by this. They were like, that worked so well and I love that album, I'm gonna do the same thing. But the difference is these were already established rock groups and established rap groups or solo artists coming together.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone just trying to imitate that sound.
I think too, like, yeah, they both brought what they were best at and did it together. And one thing I didn't, Mike, and we could probably share this link. Mike shared a YouTube video with us that we watched about the soundtrack. And one thing I didn't really think about was it seemed like they kind of tried to pair off bands that had something in common, like Slayer and Ice-T were both from LA. So when they did Disorder, they brought their own experiences, both their points of view of the same experiences together. And I think like Sir Mix-a-Lot and Mudhoney or something were both from Seattle. You know what I mean? They all had like a common bond that each one had, but they were still bringing their unique stuff to the table. I don't know because I don't really know a lot of rap. Fraggle Rock? What the hell am I trying to say?
Riverty Rap?
Fraggle Rock.
Yeah.
You don't know enough Fraggle Rock, let me tell you.
Did we just bring us into the Fraggleverse? Okay.
We did. We're back to the Fraggleverse.
So, it was the Fraggleverse, like, breaking through my brain.
I don't know if you're done your point.
No, it's going it's going off on a weird point. But my point being is, I feel like a lot of the rap rock bands were kind of like, they kind of manufactured that from the beginning. These kind of was just a happy accident almost. It was a
blending of the cultures.
What a great concept.
Yeah, it was like super revolutionary at the time. I mean, there was a couple of groups who had done like one-offs, like Run DMC and Aerosmith, one-offs. But to do an entire album of an eclectic
Yeah.
Group.
I have the matchups here if you want to read down them. We got Helmet and House of Pain, Teenage Fan Club and De La Soul, Living Color and Run DMC, Biohazard and Onyx, Slayer and Ice-T, Faith No More and Booyah Tribe, Sonic Youth and Cypress Hill, Mudhoney and Sir Mix-a-Lot, Dinosaur Jr. and Del the Funky Homo Sapien, Therapy and Fatal, and Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill. What? And as we just mentioned, the unreleased Tool and Rage Against the Machine, which is just wild.
What an amazing lineup. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, a lot of those are heavy hitters, or were, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Who actually, Anthrax and Public Enemy was even before this. So that was
That was before. Yeah. Bring the Noise.
Mm-hmm.
Great song. Love that song.
So you want to know what the influence of this album compared to the film that it supports? You want to know what this situation slightly reminds me of?
Hmm.
Because I agree, and I think we are all on the same page, that when you think Judgment Night, you think the soundtrack first, then you think the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most people don't even think the film. They just think about the soundtrack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it reminds me of the situation that we had back in the day. Now, bear with me. It's not going to make sense right away, but it will. It reminds me of the situation back with Tim Burton's Batman film and the soundtrack by Prince.
Oh, you're right.
And
it doesn't make sense.
And the only reason, and I'm not saying that soundtrack is more popular than the film, but what I am saying is that film was brilliantly scored on top of having an awesome soundtrack.
Yeah.
It was scored by Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
And when people think of the music in that film, they think of Prince, but not Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
Just like in this film, when they think of the music, they think of the soundtrack, and they don't think of Alan Silvestri.
Alan Silvestri's very Predator-like score.
But the score is awesome.
The score is good. It is. Yeah. It actually is. There's times where it's like, wow, that really sounds like the score from Predator. Because, it is Alan Silvestri, of course. But it's good. It works for this film. And it is overshadowed by the soundtrack. And so is the film.
Yeah, I know.
The soundtrack was like super successful, and the film wasn't.
Trumps everything.
But I feel bad for Alan Silvestri in this case, because his score was so top notch. But no one thinks of it when they think of the music of this film, which that's going to happen. But it's just, I always compared those two, because I always felt bad for Danny Elfman, because that Batman theme is still the best Batman theme of all the Batman themes.
It's good.
Not counting the na 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 one from way back, but anyway, quick backstory while we're on the topic before we get to your history, Justin. Alan Silvestri's first score was rejected. The original score was entirely electronic, but the filmmakers asked him to beef up action with an orchestral score.
Mm.
Director Stephen Hopkins wanted the score to sound more like the one Silvestri did for Predator 2, which Hopkins also directed, which is why there's a lot of similarities between both scores.
Okay.
The electronic sounds were dropped and a new score was written. Although fans of the movie and composer have expressed their wish to hear full original rejected score, only three tracks from it were released and included as bonus on an official release of Silvestri's new score for the film.
Mm.
Which, if I'm being honest, some of the stuff, I've listened to some of it, portions of it remind me of like a combination between Friday the 13th and the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's kind of wild. The theatrical trailer actually included some pieces of the rejected score, so it was kind of scattered throughout. But I thought that was pretty interesting. So that's why it sounds almost like Predator 2, because
that's what they wanted.
Hopkins pretty much told them, make it sound like Predator 2.
Yeah. So,
remember that smash hit we had? Let's do that again.
Do that. Yep, exactly. Anyway, Justin, what's your history with this one?
I'm trying to remember. I was like 15 when this came out, and I'm pretty sure I saw this in the theater.
Really?
Yeah, because it was around like, I think 14, 15, 16. I think we're like constantly going to see everything in the movie theater. That was like, it was like we were living in the middle of nowhere, and that was like all we did was go to the movies. So I'm pretty sure, I feel like I saw this in the theater with Chris. I could be wrong. So, but yeah, I definitely remember listening to
the mighty
sound,
Chris Wilson.
The mighty, legendary Chris Wilson. I think I remember listening to, I know I listened to the soundtrack with him in his car. I remember we listened to this. We had to listen to it frequently because when like earlier today, I listened to the entire soundtrack again, and I almost knew like every beat, every word. I knew like the entire thing. And it does. It still kicks ass. Like, I'm not even a huge Helmet fan, but like that Helmet and House of Pain song's pretty cool.
Hell yeah, it is.
It's really good. Like, my favorites are the Slayer and Ice-T song, because I was a huge Slayer fan back in the day. Yeah. When this came out, I was like, that was probably my favorite band at the time. And I wasn't really big into rap at the time, but since then I've become like, I'm kind of like a, I don't know, I'm not an Ice-T super fan, but I love Ice-T now. I don't know why. Like, I think just growing up, and it's like, he had Body Count, and he had just all the movies he's been in. And he just, I don't know, it just seems like a cool dude, man. And so I kind of like, now I even appreciate that even more now. And what was the, Del the Funky Homo Sapien. And,
I love him.
Yeah. Dinosaur Jr. song is probably my favorite song on there, because
it's good.
I've really started like getting into Del the Funky Homo Sapien like a year or two ago, because a guy I worked with, we used to work in one room together. When he started, he was like, oh, I listen to jazz if you're cool with that. I was like, just put on whatever you want. And I didn't really know much jazz, so I was like, yeah, put it on. But on Fridays, he would do hip-hop, old-school hip-hop Fridays. And he got to work before me, and I'd always hear it like, the music bumping and stuff where I got in. And so I just got like used to like every Friday. I was like, I can't wait till old school hip hop Friday, which I never thought I'd say. Yeah. And then I started getting into stuff and I actually started having opinions about different things. But yeah, Del the Funky Homo Sapien was like one that really stuck out to me. So
nice.
Fun fact, he is Ice Cube's cousin.
Is he really?
Yup.
That's crazy.
Ice Cube produced his first album and Del was very unhappy with it because it wasn't the sound he wanted. Like, that wasn't, like, artistically, that wasn't what he was going for, sound-wise.
Thanks for putting me on the map, but this album sucks.
No, but this soundtrack, dude, oh my god. I love the Biohazard and Onyx song, the Slayer and Ice-T song. The Slayer and Ice-T song, when I hear that opening drum beat, I'm ready every time.
Oh, yeah, it gets you pumped.
Yeah, I'm just like, I fucking love it.
Justin, you're done with your history. I don't want to make sure I don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I think
I
just saw it in the theater, and I probably haven't seen it since '93, or if I watched it on video once, it was probably '95 at the latest. It was probably the last time I saw it.
Isn't that so wild, though, that you're another example? It's just the way it went is that the movie was secondary to the album, and that's just crazy how that happened.
Yeah, because I definitely, whenever I think of Judgment Night, like, I instantly think of this. Like, the soundtrack, I mean, like, it's.
This is... Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. What's that?
No, I was just going to agree with Justin, like...
He's hyping me up.
Yeah.
I'm a good hype man. Yeah. Anybody out there, an aspiring hip-hop artist, and you need a hype man...
Or just a podcaster in general, and you need a hype man. get Mike.
But, and that's something I was seeing in the reviews that I... There's little YouTube videos I sent you that, like, a lot of people say that the soundtrack is, like, what people remember about this movie. You know what? I'm in the minority because I'm a big fan of the movie itself. I actually really enjoy this movie.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I fall into that camp as well. I never owned the album. I appreciated it. I definitely heard it. I mean, Mike, you probably blasted it constantly when you were younger.
I'm sure you did hear it,
I've always been more of a fan of the film. Like, even I would never, when I hear Judgment Night, I think of the film. I don't think of the soundtrack. I mean, I know the soundtrack's out there, but I'm not as attached to the soundtrack as, say, Justin. But anyway, so my history, I don't have much to add. I was introduced to it by you back in the day when we were young, and it's one of those in my DNA films now from our youth, being 14, 15, watching this movie on a Sunday afternoon at your parents' house back in the day. But something that I hinted at earlier, I teased earlier about this being a flop in the box office. During the opening weekend, there was a shooting at a screening in a Bronx theater, and local media blamed the movie itself for the incident. In response, it was quickly pulled from distribution and ran for only 2 weeks. This led to its failure at the box office and the eventual cult status.
That's a shame.
Shit. I did not know that. I just saw that it didn't make any money. Well, that explains why. God damn. So there was a shooting at screening and a shooting on the set on location. Jesus Christ,
but
man.
But see, that's kind of shitty, though. As horrific as it is to have a shooting anywhere, why is it the movie's fault?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, look, what the hell?
We can compare that to The Dark Knight.
Well, yeah, exactly. We had the horrific Dark Knight shooting.
I mean,
I don't know this Bronx shooting. I don't know if there was casualties. I don't know anything other than what I just read. But obviously the casualties in the Dark Knight was just horrifying.
Right. But, and they never pulled the movie.
Exactly. I mean, that's just crazy. So
it's But they
pulled it after 2 weeks, and that was that.
That sucks.
So that would probably explain why it was such a bust. It probably wouldn't have been. I could totally see this being an old school 90s action movie that people would have been down to go check out, you know?
Yeah.
Unless anybody has anything they want to bring up from the film, do you want me to dabble into some Pat's points, or do we want to touch on anything else before we proceed?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Thank you, Justin.
Do it to it. Isn't that your famous line when you're shooting a short film? You still say, do it to it.
Do it to it. This is definitely the first time I ever saw Jeremy Piven. For sure.
Yeah, me too.
I don't recall him in anything else prior to that.
Same.
I don't know where that falls on his own personal...
career? Let's see.
Yeah, his career trajectory. But let's
I don't know either, but yeah.
Don't ever go anywhere for any event with Jeremy Piven.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like very
for
bad
real.
Things. This, like, it's just
Smoking Aces.
Smoking Aces. Yeah.
Oh, he was in One Crazy Summer. Lucas.
No.
Say Anything.
No. Wow.
The Grifters. White Palace.
Maybe he had hair back then.
Oh, this sounds interesting. He played the patrolman in Body Chemistry 2: The Voice of a Stranger.
Ooh.
That sounds
interesting. I wanted to watch that just because that one podcast I was talking about, what do they call it now, Retrodrome?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
They just did a retrospective or whatever on that whole series of Body Chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, I got to see these now. They kind of sounds like they're like these Skin and Max kind of type movies, but it sounds like there's a lot of drama and tension and all kinds of stuff in them. And then they mentioned that he was in the second one.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's funny that this came up again.
Patrol Man.
Yeah. It's in PCU.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I might be wrong. Maybe I did see him in something else, but I didn't recognize
just
him.
Just didn't
as,
know. Yeah.
Didn't
same,
know.
Same for me. Yeah.
I think what I may, now that I'm looking at his IMDb, a couple films before Judgment Night, he was in a film called There Goes the Neighborhood. Do you guys remember that one?
I don't remember that one, no.
That was with Jeff Daniels and Catherine O'Hara. And,
oh, wow.
Hector Elizondo.
Mm.
And Rhea Perlman. And Jonathan Banks. And Dabney Coleman. And Chaz Palminteri.
God damn, I've never even heard of this movie.
And Jeremy Piven. I don't remember him in it. I remember everybody else. That was the first time I ever saw Jonathan Banks, who went on to be huge in the whole Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul franchise.
I don't even know who that is.
That's Mike, what's his name? Ehrmantraut. Mike, if you never saw Breaking Bad, correct?
No, never saw a single episode.
You would freaking, what about you, Justin?
I watched a couple episodes. It was good, but I just never finish watching it.
Yeah, his character in that whole franchise, both of them, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, he plays the same character, is just fucking awesome. But he played Handsome Harry in this old There Goes the Neighborhood. But anyway, so Piven was in that. I didn't realize that, so that's interesting. All right, so first time I saw Piven, definitely I thought that Piven's character in this film was the equivalent of the Ellis character from Die Hard.
Hans Booby. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
He went in with such cockiness that there's no situation he couldn't talk his way out of.
He thought he could talk his way out of it, yeah.
Another example, as I touched on earlier, here's another example of modern technology completely preventing this entire bad situation. If they only had a GPS, everything would have been fine.
That would have been another one, yep.
So Michael DiLorenzo, I touched on him. He played the kid who's the character that gets, spoiler alert, that gets shot by... Dennis Leary and his crew.
He is the MacGuffin?
Well, no. Well, the boxing match is the MacGuffin.
Well, yeah. But he's kind of the catalyst for all the horrible events.
But then again, they did kind of hint on why they killed him.
He stole money from them.
I guess I could see that. Yeah, I guess I could see that as a MacGuffin.
Or you could consider the traffic jam a MacGuffin.
Perhaps.
You could.
Ultimate MacGuffin in this film, though, is the boxing match, because none of it would have happened if they weren't.
True.
Again, that was just the plot device used to get him out on the road there in that RV.
Emilio Estevez just wanted to get the fuck out of that house. He was like, I need to get away from this wife and baby.
I mean, she was being insane, dude. Like... I don't want you ever seeing your friends was basically she was
but then
like,
again
you married
his
this
friend
person.
Was Jeremy Piven so yeah. I could totally see my wife being like, that guy's a douchebag, I can't believe you're gonna go out on the town with him.
Yeah,
he's
but
gonna
like,
get you killed.
He was she married him knowing that they were friends, you know what I mean?
Also Emilio Estevez is like, I haven't left the house in 3 months or whatever. And she's like, that's exactly the amount of time that I haven't left the house. Like, you know.
Yeah, take turns, dude. Like,
you know, so she's a little. Yeah, he's like saying, like, I deserve. He does. He's like, I deserve this. I haven't left the house in 3 months. And she's like, yeah, same for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I deserve a night out, too. But I'm not going out. You're going out.
Yeah look, I got to be honest, though. I'm not touching that one. I'm not falling into that trap. I can I got to be honest, though. That scene I thought was pulled off pretty well because I even felt a little cringy while watching it. I'm like, God, what a tough fucking situation. Because we've all been there in some capacity.
Yes.
Where it's
for
like,
real.
Oh, okay, fine. Go have fun.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
Well,
I guess
I'm not getting laid when I get home.
Yeah. Geez. Yeah.
Or for the next week.
Mm-hmm. That's when you just get extra drunk.
Yeah.
It's cause and effect. It's simple. Yeah. It's science.
Like, Jesus Christ. No, but you're right, Pat. We've all been in those like situations.
Yeah,
like...
I could both empathize and sympathize with both of them. Like, with someone with a young child as well. Like, and that's what you have to realize too. Like, when you have a child that young, nothing is rational anymore. You're getting like 3 hours of sleep a night if you're lucky. You're just like at your wit's end. It's chaos. There's constantly something screaming. the whole thing is a nightmare. But I can understand wanting to get out. But then you feel guilty because you're leaving your significant other behind in the war zone.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Well, then he should let her go to a boxing match next week.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, let her have a girls' night out. Go to Atlantic City for the weekend. You know, I'll take the kid.
For real.
Yeah, take Ray's RV.
It'll be in decent shape when we get back tonight.
Just air it out.
Just air it out. TV's not working, but it'll be fine. Oh God! Don't mind the gun in the glove box.
Yeah, the TV shot.
Yes, it is. All right, so this Michael DiLorenzo, real quick, who again just has a small part, and he's the character that Adam Carolla was a stand-in for when they were getting the shots all, you know, the blocking all done and everything for the shooting.
Practically separated at birth.
Yeah, exactly. But he's been in a ton. I'm only bringing him up because you'll know, even if you don't know his name, if you see him, you'll know exactly who he is. You've seen him in stuff.
looking through his page trying to figure out what I know him from. But yeah, he's all over the place.
He's in a ton. Yeah, he's in all those CSI things. He's in. In fact, I think I know him from
Alive.
Alive, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was definitely in that? Yeah. A Few Good Men. Oh, Phantoms. Is that the one with?
Phantoms is the bomb, yo.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Justin.
Well, hey, Phantom's that. Like a motherfucker. Is he in that? Huh. I actually like that movie. I don't remember him being in that.
He played a soldier.
Oh, I know exactly who he was. I got it now. I saw him recently in a low-budget movie called High Hopes.
Oh, yeah?
Produced by Danny Trejo, and he's also in it. But starring Corin Nemec from Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Oh, okay.
And Dave Faustino.
All right.
From Married with Children.
Oh, yeah.
And nice. Jason Mewes.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
And.
Why don't you speed this up?
I'm giving you time to react.
Oh, thanks.
Produced by.
This ties it in. This is why I watched the movie. Edward Furlong.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Nice.
And?
Apparently, they're buddies. They're buddies with Dave Faustino and Corin Nemec are like best buddies. And I think Edward Furlong's one of their buddies too, like in real life.
All right, yeah. So this is where I know him from, Michael DiLorenzo, Fame, from back in the day, that old the dancing show. Oh, remember that?
He was in that show.
Yeah, he was in Fame. He was in Tracy Ullman's show. He was in Head of the Class. Remember that show?
Yeah, I remember all those shows.
Oh, I do, yeah.
You remember Fame? You were 0 years old when that came out.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Fame.
Dude, I remember my older sister watching Fame, but that's like all I remember about it.
Mm-hmm. He was apparently a dancer in a bunch of Michael Jackson videos.
Oh, shit. Cool.
Beat It,
I did read it. He's like a musician, a director. Yeah. He's got like a whole bunch of things under his hat.
Yeah, well, the only thing he had under his hat in this film was a bullet.
Well, that's what you get for stealing from Dennis Leary.
That's what I'm saying. What a foolish mistake.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Although I totally find Peter Green much more intimidating.
Dude, yeah. Peter Green is the man.
He's awesome.
Not, he's not in enough. But then again, he's in three of my favorite films of all time. Mm. He's in this. He's in The Mask with Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm. And he's in Pulp Fiction. He's Zed.
Yeah. Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Is this one of your favorite movies of all time, then? Judgment Night?
Because you just literally said that. He's in three of my favorite
it's
movies
recorded
of all time.
Now.
I guess I did say that, didn't I? Well, yeah. I wouldn't say this is a favorite of all time. Is this another teaser in regards to your rating? It's deep. It's deep within my DNA.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't call it a favorite of all time, but impactful. He's in three of the most impactful films of my life.
I wouldn't call this one of my all time favorites, but it's kind of like you said, Pat. Like it just. I spent a lot of time with this movie.
I was raised. I mean, I wouldn't say raised on the movie. I don't know what I would say. I don't have a fucking point. All right, what else do I have?
Do you have a Pat's point?
I do have a Pat's point. There's a split focus shot that they use twice in this
film. Oh my God, yeah, that's in my notes. Holy crap, that's good.
So that split focus type of lens is called a split diopter lens. And it's used relatively frequently, less so now than I think probably back in the day. But typically when you see that shot, it is literally an effect within the lens where the lens will be split. Like if you watch Pulp Fiction, they use it in Pulp Fiction when Bruce Willis is running from Marcellus Wallace. He puts his back against the wall and Marcellus Wallace in the, you know, so he's in the foreground and Marcellus Wallace is in the background coming around the corner.
Yes.
And they use that shot. Now, if you watch that shot, you can almost see where one lens focal length ends and the other one begins. Because there's a drastic shift in focus. So the extreme foreground is in focus and the extreme background is in focus. But what's in between them is not. It's blurred. But in this, you don't see that line. Like, there's not that legit line. I truly believe these two scenes were shot against green screen. And that's how they got... the split
focus. I would
believe
that. It looked a little different.
Mm-hmm. It looks cool, though.
Yeah, it looks cool, but I was looking for the telltale signs of that split focus, you know, lens, and it wasn't there. So, but, you know, I thought it was cool. So there's the one scene where Stephen Dorff and Peter Green, it's those guys, and then the other one is Emilio Estevez and Dennis Leary, which is during that final little chase scene between the two of them.
I like Stephen Dorff in this, by the way.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I don't recall him being that freaking young. Like, young.
Yeah.
I mean,
you clearly don't remember
born?
The Gate.
Oh, yeah, the Gate.
That's one of the first movies I think about when I think of him, is the Gate. He was like...
God, I get it.
I think he was supposed to be like 9 or 10 in it, but I think he was really like 15. I think he was small for his age.
Born in 73, so he would have been... When did this come out? 93. He would have been
20. Yeah.
He would have been 20. Wow. Yeah,
the,
man.
The Gate came out when? 87. So
yeah, he would have been like, what, 13, 14?
The soda guy with the headphones on. I love that scene.
I remember that, yeah. Pat. I remember you and I watching that, and you like rewound it like 10 times. And we just kept laughing.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Because his reaction. Yeah.
Dennis Leary broke his own rule, though. You don't leave witnesses. You let that guy run out the door. He's like, screw it.
I don't think that guy even saw what was happening. He just all of a sudden saw somebody shooting at him and ran.
Yeah.
Dude, it definitely kind of reminds me of this scene. I mean, it's different, obviously, but the scene from Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell are you doing?
What the hell are you doing?
Those two scenes, man, they get me every time. All right, so two more things I have on Pat's points here. One is the "Don't call me Francis" line at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I didn't miss something, right? That wasn't like a running theme throughout where he was like offended when people called him Francis, is he? Did I miss that?
No, Dennis Leary was making fun of his name.
Yeah, but then, I mean, was there a foundation laid at any point in the film where he's like sensitive about that or something?
I just think it's implied that he goes by Frank, not
so
Francis.
It seemed a little one-off, but then I didn't know if that was like a little nod to, what's it called, to Stripes.
Settle down, Francis.
Yeah, because
I haven't seen that in years.
That's where the "Don't call me Francis" thing is from. And then, you know, if you call me Francis, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if that was like a little wink and a nod to that film. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I didn't know if I'd missed something. But based on your guys' reaction, I'm guessing I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, no, that point was a real snooze fest. I'm not going to lie. I'm just kidding.
All right. Well, I think we got to the bottom of that mystery. So let's move on to... So this is something that I wanted to ask you guys if you had any similar experiences. The situation in the film where they break into this market, the friends do, and they break into the market and they want to set the alarm off. They want to summon the police.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a hope and a prayer. For the first time in probably their entire lives, they want the police to come find them.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very similar situation in my youth, and I'm wondering if you guys were ever in a situation like that where you were hoping the police would come and you were doing something out of the norm. And I'm not saying just dialing 911. Like, I'm saying, have you ever done anything drastic for the hope that you would summon the police or get some kind of authority figure to come to your rescue?
No,
I don't think so. What's your story?
So my situation was back in my youth, for sure. I was probably driving for maybe only a couple of years at that point. Justin, you might remember this when I start to tell the story. So I was maybe, I don't know, between 18 and 20, if I had to guess. And in close to where we live, there's a little town called Chesapeake City. And it's a real small town that's like separated by a canal that goes right through the center of the town. And, you know, you got the north side and the south side. It's real small. It's like a small hometown kind of town. And like old antique houses and stuff, little shops and whatnot all throughout. And like, at night, there's not a lot of traffic on the main little roads. It's not a lot of roads. It's maybe what? I don't know. How many blocks there? It's not many. Maybe 10 little blocks, bunch of, little... intersections and whatnot. But I was driving a friend. I forget where we were going. We were leaving her house to maybe drive to another friend's house or something like that. And I was approaching a yield sign. And because I couldn't see around the bend, I stopped at the yield sign instead of just coasting through it, I guess. I don't know. But I had somebody behind me. And I guess because I stopped, they took offense to that, thinking that I was like effing with them. And they got really angry. And they started chasing me. Like, at first it started like, oh, you know, he's being a douchebag and tailgating. But then it started turning into like, oh, okay, he's literally like starting to drive alongside of me. And it's like he's getting uncomfortably close. And it's very aggressive. And it's kind of freaking me out. So I found myself flying through the roads in Chesapeake City, well beyond the speed I should have been going. And for the only time in my life, I was praying that there would have been a cop back
there
to like snag my ass. Like, I was begging. I was going so fast intentionally to get caught by the police so I could say these people back here are chasing me. But long story short, the police never, they weren't back there. I mean, it's such a small town. They just weren't there. I finally was able to just like, you know, taking hard turns, I was able to lose them. Another friend of mine at the time, who I haven't seen in years, a guy named Alan, he ended up, when we got back to my other friend's house who was with me, when we got back, we explained to them what had just happened, and this Alan friend took off and went on the hunt for them and ended up like tracking them down, which was extremely brave. But I am pretty positive, based on what I heard after talking to Alan, because he ended up knowing the people, and I don't want to go too much down this road, but we had a horrific incident happen, our community did, way back in the day. Justin, you would remember.
Oh, yeah. I think I know where this is going. Yeah.
Where there was a homicide, and it turns out, apparently, according to Alan, those guys that were chasing me were the ones that the whole town
suspected.
Pretty much know. were involved in some capacity in that horrific event, which makes my experience all that more horrifying.
Hell yeah.
So, but he was the one that, like, fucking ballsy as shit. He's like, somebody was fucking chasing you and got right in his fucking truck and just took off after them, found them. And later on, when I was trying to get back out, I drove by them. I saw the two vehicles parked and Alan out chatting with the guys. And he told me later, he was like, do you know who they were? And I'm like, no, enlighten me. And he was like, he told me. And I was like, holy fuck. I could have been murdered, like straight up. Yeah. So
that's fucking nuts, dude.
Anyway.
I do remember that story of them chasing you down. I don't even remember the rest of it. Yeah.
I think I was at whatever house the destination was. Whatever when you guys got to whatever house you were going to, I think I was there because I remember you telling us what happened and then Alan took off.
But anyway, so that was the only time that I can recall where I intentionally went out of my way hoping that the long arm of the law would come hunt me down so I could have some kind of protection against the evil that was chasing me. But anyway, it just that one scene reminded me of that experience. So anyway, that is pretty much all of my Pat's points. So Justin, Mike, I know you guys had some points. So, Mike, since this was your selection, I'll let you pick whether you want to give your points first or you want to throw it over to Justin.
I'll just throw mine out there real quick. It's just a couple little things. Nothing. We covered a lot of the things I already wanted to talk about. I think I have like two or three things. One, I mentioned it earlier, a little teaser of someone who took a shot at the script, which, by the way, the original script was written by Kevin Jarre, J-A-R-R-E, I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
We're not going to start pronouncing names directly on our 30th episode.
I think I heard it pronounced Jarre, Kevin Jarre. He wrote the original script, but it was much darker and violent initially. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people rewrote it, and one of the people who took a turn was John Carpenter.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I read that. There are several others, but his name popped out. I was like, oh, shit.
So, okay. So
it seems like a good fit for him.
Yeah, but real quick, before we talk about Carpenter, this Jarre, what's his name, Kevin Jarre?
Yeah.
So he was, he originally wrote the script, or he just took a crack at, like, the screenplay?
No, he wrote the original.
So why isn't he credited?
because it got rewritten so many times.
Oh, he just got worked out.
It got reworked so much.
He did
much.
Something I liked, though. How do you spell his name?
Kevin Jarre. J is spelled J-A-R-R-E.
Yeah.
So he has done. He did Story for Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yes, that was the one I remember.
He did Glory, and he did all-time classic Tombstone.
Yes. Tombstone, that was the one I was thinking of. Yeah,
because I did look him up yesterday, and I couldn't remember a single one of the ones he did.
And then The Devil's Own.
He also directed Tombstone.
No, he didn't.
Oh, shit.
Oh, looks like he might have been assistant director.
Oh, he did the
Charlton
Heston scenes, uncredited. This man does not get a lot of credit.
No.
That's a damn shame.
It looks like it's a...
Oh, man.
He was often a script doctor, rewriting scripts such as the 1990 movie Navy SEALs. He apparently wrote an adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula that never got made from his script. So, yeah, this dude, yeah.
All right, so here we go. This fucking sucks. So,
died at 56.
Died. Ooh.
That's a
died
shame.
April 3rd, 2011, a heart failure. By coincidence, his mother also died of heart failure, if anyone's wondering. He had a profound interest in history since childhood. He was especially fascinated by the American Civil War, which led to his in-depth research of the 54th Massachusetts Regiment, which inspired his screenplay for Glory. He began directing Tombstone from his own screenplay, but was replaced by George P. Cosmatos. Jarre's scenes featuring Charlton Heston are still featured in the finished film. So I'd be intrigued to know why he was replaced. Maybe they just didn't like where it was going.
Yeah, maybe they just weren't, the producers or whatever just weren't happy with whatever he was doing.
That's a damn shame, man. Poor guy. Yeah. I mean, he might be a douchebag. I don't know.
All right, so...
it's a shame that he has passed, though.
That sucks. 56 years old. That's too young, man. Couple more little small things. Why did the one girl in the apartment that they were hiding out in, when Dennis Leary and his gang shows up, start yelling for them, and they realize, like, oh shit, they didn't lose them, you know, or the girls realize that. The one girl suddenly develops an Irish accent.
Oh, I didn't.
She's like,
I missed that.
She's like, get the fuck out of me house. I'm like, why did she say that? She literally says, get the fuck out of me house. Get the fuck out of me house. It's like, that. It's so out of, it's like, what? Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Maybe she was channeling Miss Cleo. I don't know.
It's weird. It's a really weird line delivery.
It's funny.
And the only other thing I wanted to bring up, at the very end of the movie, when the cop walks up to Frank and he hands him his wallet, and he's like, "That's a nice looking family." Like he has the picture of him and his wife and baby.
Yeah.
What? For some reason, this time it struck me when I watched it. It struck me as funny. It's not what happened or what I think should have happened, but when the cop hands him the wallet, he should have been like, "That's a nice looking family, Francis." And he turns around and it's Dennis Leary in the cop uniform. And the movie ends.
I thought it'd be funny if he's like, "That's a nice looking family," and he said, "Thanks, I made it myself." Or Repo Man.
Yeah. That's all I got. We covered it.
Because literally,
else.
He would have made, but not by himself. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
those
are good points. Mike's points.
Well, one more small thing.
Jesus.
No, you mentioned.
He pulls his pants down.
You mentioned Tom.
One more small thing.
I'm taking that camera back.
You mentioned Tom Cruise and Christian Slater, but I also saw other people, a couple others who were considered, which I brought up, Travolta and Kevin Spacey, but also Ray Liotta and Samuel Jackson were considered for this movie. I don't know for what roles, but yeah, they were also in the mix at one point.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Justin, we're going to get to your points momentarily. I just wanted to look at Emilio's stuff because obviously Repo Man, The Breakfast Club, of course, that kind of like, I mean, he's reached pop culture icon status with that role alone.
You could just
kind of, yeah. St. Elmo's Fire, Maximum Overdrive. Maybe that'll end up on the Guild one of these days.
I think it's on my list.
Young Guns.
Yeah.
Young Guns 2. Men at Work. That's another. One's actually on my list.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Free Jack, The Mighty Ducks, Loaded Weapon 1. That is a classic.
Speaking of, like, I know we talk about books and adaptations, and I haven't read as many books clearly as Mike has, but Free Jack was one of those movies where I actually read the book in high school. I don't even know if I finished it. It was like Immortality Inc. or something was the book. I was like probably 14 or something when I read it, and I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I can't remember this. I'm looking at his IMDb. Mission Impossible. Was he one of the characters when Tom Cruise came out with the Mission Impossible franchise, the movie franchise, not the original TV shows? Wasn't Estevez one of the characters that was like killed off in the first 10 minutes?
Yeah. He's on the elevator. He gets smushed on the elevator.
That's right.
That's what Sarah hates that movie.
Yeah. I'm because, with her.
Yeah, you brought that up.
Because she's like, the whole movie, the idea is about a team and an ensemble, and like they just kill off the entire team at the beginning, and it's just a fucking
Tom Cruise
wank fest. Though I think Jean Reno's in it for a while, isn't he? I can't remember. I haven't seen it since it came out.
I haven't seen that movie in a hot minute.
I still like it.
But anyway, Justin, you have some points?
Let's see, a few things. I'm going to throw... Justin's joints. Everybody sit back, toke up, and check out. I'm getting ready to lay some knowledge on you.
Yep, do it.
Now, I don't know. Sarah had a few points. Sarah said this was like in a time in the 90s where they would pick villains that weren't that scary. They were just comedians.
Wait, if Sarah has points, then she needs to get on here and present them.
Sarah Soints.
I don't even know where she's at.
You can be her spokesperson. Go on.
I'll be her spokesperson. She said she just like didn't find Dennis Leary that scary. No, I think he did a good job, but you know.
I will tell you the one moment where he is genuinely like scary.
The Jeremy Piven.
I
thought so too.
When he's like yelling at him, like, "Oh, you think we're the same, huh?" And the look in his eyes is like pure murder. Like I was like, "Holy shit, he looks actually scary."
Felt real too. Because I've known people that feel the same way. Like you don't fucking know me. Yeah. You don't know where I've come from and where I've been. You know, like you're out of your league in my in my neck of the woods. Like.
Yeah, we're not the same. Like, he's trying to say, we're the same. And he's like, no, fuck you. We're not the same. Yeah, exactly. And that's what you need to understand. Yeah,
he did crush that scene for sure.
He did. And Jeremy Piven's spine.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. And Piven did great in that scene, too.
Yes, yes.
That was a really great back and forth.
That was a great scene. That was probably one of the best scenes in the movie.
The tension of that, like, what is going to happen?
But yeah, Piven, that was his expertise as an actor on display right now. Mm-hmm, because Element, you could kind of trace everything he's done since back to that scene in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his best qualities as an actor are on display in that scene.
Yeah, I can agree with
that. Wheeler, dealer, he thinks he can talk his way out of the situation. But the nervousness, like you could tell he starts to like crack a little bit. Like he's like trying to stay strong, but he's nervous as shit because he is freaked the fuck out.
He's putting up a false front, as they say. He's scared shitless, but he's trying to be like the businessman.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to control the situation.
Yeah. Have the bigger balls, and you're not going to have the bigger balls against Dennis Leary in that moment.
Who just shot a guy in the head, like no hesitation.
Exactly.
Like, but anyway, go ahead, Justin. What else you got?
Another fun thing I like to do is like I like to envision certain movies. Like if we were in these roles, like who would be who?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I thought in this I pictured like. There's four characters, but there's only three of us.
Yeah.
So I kind of almost envision myself would be an Emilio Estevez character because I have a younger brother that would maybe potentially tag along with us on something.
Yeah. So like that'd be putting, Mikey.
yeah, exactly.
Me and Pat don't have younger brothers, that's for sure. Yeah. Or brothers at all.
At all, no. Pat would then be like the Jeremy Piven character.
Oh, God.
Mike would then be the Cuba Gooding Jr. tough guy character.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know
how
I feel about that.
Yeah, it's science of sound. However, later on, there was a scene when they're in the store, like when they break in, they're having that shootout,
mm-hmm.
and Emil, I asked if he's hiding behind a thing, and there's a whole fucking pile of bananas behind him. I was like, no, Mike would be the Emil.
You dick. This comes back to those damn bananas, man.
High in potassium.
Yeah. Dennis Leary don't know what he's doing. He's in my territory now.
Yeah. He's like, Joe popped out with two bananas. Man, we should remake these with scenes with us in it where Mike pops out with the two bananas.
Yeah.
Like a cartoon.
Yeah, just squeeze them.
Yeah.
And the bananas shoot out of the peel.
It like flies in his mouth. He's like, oh. Like,
but we'll do the reverse thing where it's in his mouth and we play backwards.
It gets pulled out by a string.
Yeah.
Dude, we're wasting our time doing this shit. We should be doing that shit.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
What else I have? Oh, yeah, I wanted to get back. So, this was my teaser when you said to don't move, don't whisper, don't even breathe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why I hate that tagline is because they do nothing but fucking move this entire time.
They do nothing but fucking? Hey, look, it was a highly stressful situation they were in. All right?
And that's fine. You want to keep moving. I get it. But then it gets me to my next point. Don't whisper. They weren't. They were yelling the entire time. Yeah. They weren't stealthy at all. There's like dudes with guns chasing.
They tried to whisper that one time, and that's when the guy with the chicken brain started screaming.
Yeah,
and he's like, and then someone's like, huh? And he's like, I said. But yeah, they're like yelling. Like even when they're running, they're hopping over a fence, they're yelling, remember that time? Like, shut the fuck up. Don't say anything. Just make signals. Like, none of us are military trained or anything.
Yeah.
But I guarantee if we're in a situation, I'm like, and I wave and I point to a door. Yeah. It's like, shh, which we're all running to that door on 1, 2, 3. We're gone. Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't take a genius.
Me and Pat, we do have, when we went paintballing, we did work out some signals.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
we did.
I'm sure we could bust them out and dust them off in a case that we're being chased through the city.
Yeah.
You would figure it out pretty quickly. Yeah. I'm sure it would come back to you when Dennis Leary's chasing you with his band of miscreants.
Mm-hmm. And Everlast.
And Everlast.
It was Everlast, yeah. And then just like weird things, like even when they went down into the sewer grate, and it's like, all right, thank God you escaped. And then they just sit there.
Keep moving.
Talking.
Yeah. They're still talking. Under the grate. I know. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I
guess talk about this shit later when you're back in your living room going, hey, wasn't that crazy that time when we did this thing? Like, don't sit there and then like, haha, we found you. Like, how did they find us? Because you're sitting there talking. You should have been, as soon as you hit the water, you should have been moving. Like, just keep fucking moving.
I agree.
Just sit there and talk. That drove me nuts. These are things that all drove me nuts.
But then again, I guess they were thinking, well, they're not going to look down here. Like, why would they look down here?
Well, that's a stupid assessment.
Because they're looking everywhere.
Because there's really only one way out, down, at that point, where they ran to. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out.
But also, they're probably trying to take a breather because they were running.
You got time to breathe later. So
no, don't breathe. Another,
don't breathe. Yeah. That's a good point. So the next thing they did that was dumb, which I see why they did it, but was still kind of dumb, was the part we were talked about when they went to like the grocery store and they threw the trash can through the window and they're like, haha, we're safe now. It's like, who's going to get there first? Mm-hmm. The police who clearly don't give a shit anyway, who never responded before. And it's like dead quiet in this town. They're like, oh, there's an alarm going off. I wonder who that is. It's going to draw them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but I mean, at that point, maybe it's a desperation thing.
Yeah, it was desperation,
There's another scene where they do get away and they're on like the second floor of some building that's kind of blown out or something. Mm-hmm. And they're hiding kind of. But I think it was like Cuba Gooding Jr. was kind of just walking back and forth in front of these lit windows. Like, I know you're kind of being a lookout, but why don't you just hide behind instead of just being... You made yourself a target. Like, what other things drove me mad? Oh, and then the other thing that drove me mad, he already knows... Like, he has to figure out that he has his wallet when he tells him his address, what his wife looks like, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then later, when they're fighting, he's like, no, we're getting out of here. And he's like, no. And I'm like, this is coming from someone, I'm a very sensitive sissy kind of guy, and I'll give you a story about how, like, you know, you watch hockey and everybody's like, yeah, I like watching hockey for the fights. Mm-hmm. My brother one time, we went, because we'll go to the Flyers game sometimes, and we were, this was the closest I'd ever been. I think it was like four rows back. Mm-hmm. And a fight broke out right in front of us. And it was like, it was when they were playing the Rangers, and it was when the Rangers, I think, were constantly just kicking our ass all the time, keeping us from the playoffs, everything. and there was a fight, and so you'd think you'd be pumped. And I'm just watching these dudes, these grown men, just punch each other in the face, and I felt like really uncomfortable. I was like, I can't wait till this fight's over. So yeah. So this next statement's going to come from the guy who said this. Mm. You got to fucking kill these dudes.
Yeah.
You have to murder them because they're going to come after you. There's no stopping them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he already threatened his wife and kid. Like,
yeah. Yeah, he's already, you know, he's coming for you. You just got to, and you're on his turf where you can make it look like an accident and throw him in a river or something. And no one's going
to
know.
And that's what I don't get, too. Like, even when he got to the point where Dennis Leary was, you know, he fell and he's laying there at the bottom of the steps and the movie's kind of coming to an end, I would pick up the biggest fucking cinder block and just crush his fucking skull at that point. Like, to make sure his ass was not getting up.
But again, how many freaking movies have we all seen where they don't do that? So it's not like that's unique to this movie.
I know. I'm just saying, you know, when I know my family, he's already threatened to go to my fucking house. I don't want him surviving this.
True.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even if he, like, recoups in 3 months, he's, you know, back out on the street.
Yeah, he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. He already lost his whole gang.
Mm-hmm. They're done.
Poor Everlast. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Well, he's not. He's not really dead. Yeah. In the movie, he's dead.
He got shot off.
He's alive and well, though he did almost die at one point. He had a heart attack.
Did he from what? Did he really?
Young. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Drugs. From drugs. Like, he was, you know, doing too much stuff.
Too much of that yayo?
Yeah, probably.
I think that's another term that you taught me.
Oh, really?
All about discovery. I think so. Somebody did. I didn't know that until I was well into my adults. My last thing about why, and this is all going back to when the dude said it was absurd, and I agreed with him. These are all the points because of their behavior. When they decide, we're going to make our final stand. Three of us and three entrances or exits or whatever it was at the time. Mm-hmm. Peter Green's character still came through an entrance they maybe forgot about or something.
Well,
like, they didn't.
Yeah, I questioned that, but I feel like maybe that was one of the entrances that the brother was responsible for, and then it just, like, he slipped in, and then he was trying to, like, draw attention to Cuba Gooding Jr. He was trying to get his attention and let him know he's sneaking up behind you without actually just running out and getting shot himself. As we established in the Killer Be Killed episode, bullets are fast.
Yes, so, they are.
You know, I feel like it was just a, I don't know. I can imagine being in that situation and just, like, you glance away for 1 second, and that's when the motherfucker comes in, you know? And
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I'm not trying to rationalize it, but, you know.
No, but that makes sense. Still ridiculous, though. And then Peter Green's character kind of, like, walks, and this is a problem Sarah had. She's like, he, like, has a gun and, like, closes the range on him.
Just shoot him.
But I think the only defense I'd have on that is I don't think guns are as accurate as people think. Like, you really have to... Huh?
Nope, they're not.
Oh, nope. I thought you said who. I was guns.
Nope. they're not as accurate as people think.
Yeah, so I think maybe he's like, I'm not going to take a chance.
Especially handguns.
Because he doesn't know I'm coming. I'm just going to come right up and hit him point blank. And plus, I guess if you're closer, you'll probably do more damage. Yeah. So he'll make sure he gets him.
Mm. Yeah.
So anyway, there's that. Anyway, that's a long-ass weird tirade, but I just wanted to blow those points out real quick.
No, that's cool. All right, well, speaking of blowouts, let's rate this thing. Mike, it's your selection, so how do you want, what order do you want to use here?
I'm gonna have Justin go first.
Okay, Justin, you're up.
All right. Mention this nostalgia factor. It's fun. I like the atmosphere. Soundtrack's great. I like the cast. You know, despite some ridiculousness that happened with some of the stuff, I still enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But I'm probably going to go... What was the one I think I gave Under the Skin a 7. So I think I got to go lower with this, but I still enjoyed it. I'll go
6.3. All right. Who's next, Mike?
I will let you go next.
Okay. I'm going to give this... Again, this is not the greatest film of its time. This is not... This to me, again, we've encountered it multiple times. I don't want to keep sounding like a broken record, but this is one of those films that's kind of in my DNA, and it, you know, it brings me back to a time and a place. And it was fun. And it was fun for the time, and it was fun to watch it again. Yeah, I mean, just based on that, I think I'm kind of in the, I'm kind of in the 7 range. I think I'm just going to kind of go with the 7. I know that that's high. I'm not rating this on just the film itself through, you know, in a vacuum. I understand that this is very much influenced by my personal experiences, but that's where I'm at with it. So
I think that's, I mean, there's, it's like impossible to, impossible to avoid, you know, your personal feelings. Like you said, the nostalgia taking you back to a certain time period. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. You know, it's the whole package. So bouncing right off of that myself, of course, yeah, I've got the nostalgia factor. I love this movie. I love the soundtrack even more. If anybody out there, if you do check out the film, check out the soundtrack too, if you're into that type of music. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to give this like a super high score, but I will go a tiny bit higher. I'm going to go, what did you say, Pat?
7.
You said a solid 7?
Yep.
I'll say 7.2.
So that gives us an average of 6.83.
Nice. I think that's, yeah. Because this movie is definitely above, you know, mediocre for sure. It's not a mediocre film.
It's not.
It's definitely one that I would recommend someone see if they've never seen it, you know.
Yeah, check, I mean, it's
it
out
if they missed it.
It's a little high, but definitely in the pepper shed of what the audience score is. Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What was that, 54?
54.
Yeah, so we're, you know, just slightly higher than that. That's cool.
Also, we almost did it, Mike. We almost actually rounded it off to
6.9.
Oh, shit.
We were right there.
Oh, man.
If we were even 0.2 higher, it could have rounded up.
Yeah.
You know, like if we were up to like 6.85, I could have rounded it to 6.9.
Damn.
Yeah.
But too late. It's locked in.
Oh, well. So maybe next time.
All right. Any final thoughts? I know there's a lot of the stuff within the film we didn't really dig into, but I thought we dug into a lot of nuggets, a lot of fun facts, interesting tidbits, things that I didn't know, even not only about the film, but about the soundtrack. So we learned something, which is cool. So any final thoughts? Anything we missed?
I think I'm pretty sure I said everything I set out to say. Pat, I loved your scary story.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was freaky.
Yeah, fuck that, man. Mm. But I didn't know the part about who they were.
Yeah, well, when you found that part out, it made it even worse.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't even know the whole story in the first place about the girl and everything. I'd never heard that. It's fucked up. Oof.
Yeah, all right. Well, I want to make sure. So we talked about Emilio's stuff. Cuba Gooding Jr., we didn't really talk about much of his career.
No.
He's been in a ton. I mean, you can look him up. I mean...
I think
Dennis Leary. Oh, we do need to, real quick. That's what we need to touch on.
We should talk about Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary. Okay, yeah. So he was a comedian. So Remote Control he was involved in. Then he did a No Cure for Cancer was a special he did back in the day. I think it was on MTV. That was 93. So that was, I think he did this coming off of that special.
He did, yes.
So.
Yes.
That was, he had a CD of the same name, didn't he? It was his comedy or something.
With the song Asshole. Remember that shit?
Yeah.
I'm an asshole. That was,
well, it was probably a recording of that,
yeah, I'm not sure.
Comedy routine. That comedy, routine. Jesus Christ.
It doesn't matter. So anyway, he was a comedian, and then, let's see what acting says. He's got 74 acting credits now, so that's pretty impressive.
He's done a lot since, you know.
The Ref.
So he was in the Sandlot. So yeah, 93 for him. Holy shit, 93. This is all 93. The Sandlot, Who's the Man, Gunman, Demolition Man, and Judgment Night. And then he goes right into The Ref in 94. Operation Dumbo Drop.
Mm.
Two If by Sea, Underworld, Suicide Kings.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Wag the Dog, Small Soldiers, A Bug's Life. Yeah, he's done a shit ton.
He's done a lot.
Ice Age, he does a voice, a cartoon.
What was that TV show he was in? Chicago Fire or something? Not Chicago Fire.
Oh, Rescue Me.
Rescue Me, that's it. Yeah. Chicago Fire. What? It's about firemen.
Is this Chicago Fire is like in the 1800s or something?
There's a show called that. There's a show called Chicago Fire.
Really?
Yeah. Probably okay. About firemen. That's why. That's where I got it from. Come on now.
Yeah. All right. Anyway. Okay. Oh, yeah. That's right. He was in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, that second Spider-Man movie franchise.
Was he?
Yeah. He played the father of Gwen Stacy.
That's right. I remember now. Yep.
He was like a firefighter or a cop or something.
I only saw those movies once.
Captain Stacy.
Yeah.
I think in the comic books, that's what his name was.
I want to mention him only because he's kind of a special case. Where, you know, that comedian and then getting into acting and having, like, it wasn't like he's just playing funny guys, you know? Like,
yeah. No, he definitely branched out.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you recall when they were saying that Dennis Leary, basically, this is what people said, Dennis Leary, like, lifted his routine from Bill Hicks?
Yeah, I remember that, yep.
And Bill Hicks died of cancer, and then his first album thing that came out was No Cure for Cancer.
I
don't know how much I believe that, but there's similarities in style.
He may have been influenced by him. Yeah.
Let's be honest, though. I mean, everybody's knocking everybody off. I mean, if you're influenced, there's a fine line between being influenced and ripping off.
Well, if you grow up watching somebody or listening to somebody, it's going to seep into you. You know what I mean? Unless you consciously push yourself away and say, "No, I'm not going to do that." Mm-hmm. But if it's somebody you like and you're influenced by, your influences are, like, as you bring up, Pat, it's part of your DNA. Mm-hmm. So,
I agree.
But I know that joke ripping off is a big thing.
Oh,
in
the whole stand-up. If it's just like straight up plucking the words and rewriting
plagiarism.
Them and shifting a couple ums and ahs.
Changing the wording and stuff,
That's been happening since the beginning of time. Like, I feel like even back in the vaudeville days and stuff, that was like, it was already known. There's like, it didn't matter who wrote it. It's like, who told, who told it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all in the delivery. Right.
Well, speaking of delivery, let's deliver this one home.
I don't like that. That was you were really reaching there, buddy.
All right. Speaking of reaching, let's reach around on this one.
Oh.
No, okay. Man. All right. We'll get there. So, any final thoughts? Done? We done?
No, I think we're good.
Yeah, I think you're done. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, what else you gonna do? I don't know. I got nothing.
All right.
Fuck.
So yes, we are the MacGuffin Guild. I'm Pat. I'm with Justin and Mike, as per usual, and we want you to keep tagging along on this ride of ours, and do so by following us on our social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Discord. And we'd love for you to continue to be a part of this. It's been fun. And we want to hear from you. So please, if we miss something, if we got something wrong, and we know we do constantly, so call us out, let us know. And we'd love to hear it. And we're not claiming to be right. We're just looking for an excuse to all get together and learn and talk and have fun and focus on positive. So that's what we're about.
And sometimes we say stuff intentionally wrong.
That is true.
See if anyone's listening, but...
Hey, I just want to mention real quick, when this airs, this will be our 30th episode.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We're taking a break next week, so...
Yes.
I think every seventh week we're probably going to take a breather.
Yeah.
So if you're used to hearing it every week, and maybe we'll come up with some filler stuff to throw in, like, I don't know, some of reciting Bible verses or something.
If depending on how things unfold, if not, that would be a great opportunity for you to either go back and listen to one of the episodes you haven't caught yet, or recheck out your favorite one. You know, just
hop on our social media and tell us how shit we are. Just do that.
We always appreciate that.
Yeah, we don't care. Yeah, just say it.
I hear it every day in my daily life, so why not hear it online, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Just be real, man. 2021, it's all about being real. Yeah, lay it on us.
Unless you're on Apple Podcasts, then you can, you know, bend the truth a little. Give us the 5 stars. Let us know something positive about what we have to offer. And then
I'd take 4, but yeah, 5. No, just 4 follow is fine. Your heart. You know you want to give 5.
Yeah. Anything under that, don't bother.
No.
Yeah.
No, just do that on our Facebook so we could delete that comment and block you.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, shit.
Okay, anyway, any final thoughts, fellas? We good?
Negative.
Okay. Well, thank you, everybody, and we will see you not next week. We will see you the week after. Oh, yeah, so just to reiterate what Justin said, we're going to come out with 6 film schedules, and every 7th week, we're going to take a little week off to just kind of, like, you know, reassess and recalibrate to make sure we're keeping on top of our game here. So...
Yeah, that's kind of just keep it kind of fresh, too, because, you know, you do it every week, you kind of get in a routine. Yeah. Kind of.
We don't want to keep pumping out the same show.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Fellas, always a pleasure.
Later, Gators.
See ya.
Peace.
I raised you better than this.
Like I said earlier, now you guys have to see my horrid face. So.
Your hard face?
Horrid. H-O-R-R-I-D.
I thought you said your hard face.
Like, my rugged, manly like, face.
What a weird way to describe your face.